Blog Talk Radio.
All right, fans, here we go. 4 2-minute rounds of boxing scheduled. Women's in the ring.
Fans, here is another episode of the 2-Minute Round, your hooks and jabs look at the female fight world on Leave It in the Ring Network. My name is Felipe Leon, co-host of this, the 2-Minute Round, and with me, as always, my fellow co-host, David Avila from East LA, and from Phoenix, Arizona, Miss Elena Baby Doll Reed. David, how are you doing today?
Very good, Felipe. How are you?
Good, good. And Elena, I know that you just got into the gate, like you said. How is it going over there in Phoenix?
Busy as per usual, but things are great. Thank you.
Great. And here we are, another episode, number 12 of this, the 2-Minute Round, where we take a close look at the female fight world every other week on the Leave It in the Ring Network. If you'd like to give us a call and talk about female fighting, female boxing, you can at 347-215-7598. I'm going to repeat that. It's 347-215-7598. And like the last couple episodes, we're getting better and better here in the 2-Minute Round. And tonight, we have a very special guest coming on in about 15 minutes. We're going to have the current WBC and WBA featherweight champion all the way from Canada, Jelena Mirjanovic, who is going to be calling and giving us her time a little bit and talk about her upcoming fight in October, as well as her past career, and have her on here for a little bit. Last episode, number 11, we had the WBC featherweight international champion, Heather Hardy, and before that, we had the legendary Christy Martin on episode, I believe it was number 9 or number 10, if you guys want to go back into the archives and check them out. But tonight, in about 15 minutes, we'll have the WBC and WBA featherweight champion, Jelena Mirjanovic. And just to touch on something that not so much has to do with the female fight world, but it has to do with the boxing world in general. Just yesterday, tragically, we lost one of our legendary fighters, especially here in Southern California. We lost the great Bobby, the schoolboy Chacon, a staple here in Southern California boxing. He was always at all the fights in the L.A. area, and tragically, he lost his life yesterday. I believe the reports are that he fell and suffered a head injury. But to touch a little bit more on the subject as far as what Bobby the schoolboy Chacon meant to boxing, especially to Southern California boxing, is Mr. David Avila, who, you know, throughout his storied career had the pleasure and the honor to cover Bobby Chacon. David.
The boxing world is in tears. Some of the people I spoke to were very emotional about losing Bobby Chacon, including Danny Little Red Lopez, who they had a titanic struggle way back in the early 70s. And he was pretty emotional about losing his friend. They were now friends, Bobby Chacon. And Chacon was one of those guys that really gave his heart and soul to boxing. I mean, so much so that he was engaged in two back-to-back fight of the year fights, according to Ring Magazine. One was with Bazooka Limon, and another was with Cornelius Boza Edwards, who later on trained our co-host, Elena Baby Doll Reed. And they were amazing battles. I mean, you had to see them. And in those days, there was no HBO and Showtime, like my host, Felipe Leon, said earlier. But I think it was on CBS, and it was one of those fights that you were just like closing your eyes because the action was so intense. But and Boza Edwards, who's still doing his job, still training in Las Vegas, he's still around now. Elena can touch on that too. How about a few words, Elena?
Oh yeah, no. You know, like I talked to you guys earlier before the show, and I was just saying, Boza Edwards was my mentor, and still for boxing. And so that's how I learned about Bobby Chacon. And I was fortunate enough to meet him. And I really have to say, you know, he was like the spirit of boxing. And I feel like, you know, he was in a days like where you were saying like, he gave it his all. And he wasn't making the money that they're making today or what you think like a world champion should make. And so he did, you know, he had that rough life. And he was like one of the first people that I saw of that generation. I met more of them, but they really had not a dime left from boxing because, you know, they didn't make that much to begin with. And it was hard, as we call it in, it's not, you know, the term that we use is punch drunk. And so he did, you know, he really suffered because of his heart that he had in that ring. But even while being punch drunk, he was at every fight. He was so nice to everyone. He was nice to women boxers. I mean, any boxer, he loved boxing. Like, it was his life. It was his heart. And so it's really sad because you just always felt like betting him, like, why didn't boxing give him more? Like, why isn't he doing better? And so I just hope that if anything, you know, we're talking about him more and also those issues that there is in men's boxing, but especially women's boxing, who are giving their heart and soul. And, you know, people are buying tickets to come and see him, but they're just not seeing anything for it. So, you know, rest in peace. He's in a better place. And may the rest of the world, like, really learn what a rough world boxing can be, and maybe, you know, we can make it better.
Well spoken.
Thank you.
Yes. David, you saw him fight live. Did you get a chance to, what I remember him, and just to touch on my interactions with Bobby Chacon, I mean, obviously, those who encountered him in this second half of his fight, of his life, it was very obvious that he was suffering from pugilistic dementia, and it was kind of hard to talk to him. But he was always at the fights, always willing to take a picture with anybody, give a hug, give a kiss in the cheek, a big smile.
Oh, yes.
And everything. Was he like that, that happy-go-lucky guy back then when he was fighting and you were able – did you ever get to interview him back then when he was actually active as a fighter?
No, I never got to interview him when he was fighting. It was actually Danny Red Lopez I did, but not Bobby Chacon. I didn't really get to know Bobby personally until he retired. And then it was an occasion to ask him about retirement because he was one of the first guys to receive a retirement check from the state of California. And he broke a lot of ground because of that. And people love this guy. I mean, he actually was living here in Riverside County when he passed away on Wednesday, and he had another friend from Riverside who would go out of his way to take care of him. His name was Mike Donahue, and he was just very well beloved. I saw him at almost every small card in California. If he could get there, he would be there. He loved boxing.
Yeah, so, you know, rest in peace, Bobby the Schoolboy Chacon, and the boxing world will miss you. Moving on to the two-minute round, the actual show where we speak about female fighting, we're going to get started with the fight results. And just like the rest of boxing and the boxing world, there has been a little bit of a slowdown in boxing because of the summer and the 2016 Olympics. And obviously the female boxing is not immune to that. So there is a little bit less female boxing out there, but it's ramping up again. It's coming back, and hopefully we get a little bit more by the end of the year. But starting off in the fight results on Friday, the August 26th from Buenos Aires, Argentina, Carolina Duer stopped Italian Aline De Cassia Scaranello in the seventh round of a Schedule 10 to defend her interim IBF bantamweight title. Scaranello was down in the seventh from a wicked left hook. She got up, but then after Duer smelled blood, went after her. The corner threw in the towel. Did you see that? I sent you guys the video. Did you see that left hook that she scored there, David, on this Italian fighter?
Oh, yeah. You know, yeah, she looked powerful. I've seen Duer before. And but ever since she had her baby, and when she came back, she seems to be twice as strong. I mean, she was straight and was shot.
Uh-huh. Yeah, that's what I was noticing too. Yeah, that was a devastating left hook, and that's what I noticed as well, that after, I think this is her second fight, if not her first, after about a two-year hiatus after becoming a mother, that she comes back. And now I think she's a player in the bantamweight title, a bantamweight division, which is starting to heat up. You know, we had some past fights in that division, just happened in this last couple of weeks that we're going to talk about. And then we got a couple coming up. So, you know, even though the Argentinians, it's kind of tough to get them out of the other country because boxing is so popular. I mean, I believe if it's not the number one female boxing country in the world, it's certainly number two. I mean, I think between Argentina and Mexico and perhaps Germany, those are the top three. And I think the top spot is kind of they're playing what's that game with chairs, musical chairs, between the top spot between those three countries. Almost every week there's a fight card featuring a world title in Argentina. So let's see if Cardinal Duer is willing to come over to Mexico or another country to face some of the other bantamweights, or if those bantamweights that are located in Mexico and other countries are willing to go down in Argentina. And obviously the big factor there is the money that they're going to get paid to either travel in or out of Argentina or Mexico. On Saturday, August 27th, the next day, from the Arena Coliseo in Mexico City, it was televised on Televisa, like we spoke in the last show when we talked about this fight, that it was upcoming. It was going to be the main event. It was the main event on the biggest network in Mexico, Televisa. Maria Juarez, shockingly, or maybe not so shockingly or surprising, lost a unanimous decision to another Argentinian, Daniela La Bonita Bermudez, in a 10-rounder, which at first it was announced as the WBC International title, but then the night it was actually announced as a title eliminator at 118 pounds. The scores there were 97-93 two times and a little bit closer, 96-94. And, you know, I had the opportunity to watch this fight, and like I was talking to David and Elena before the show started, you know, Barbie looked really good. She looked really good in the first third of the fight, maybe the first half. She was moving very well laterally. She was boxing. She was not being a stationary target for the slightly bigger Daniela Bermudez. But, you know, Bermudez, she was just relentless, and she just kept throwing straight punches down the middle. And then she began to squirm in the middle of the fight, at one point hurting Barbie, where it looked like she was going to go down, but she didn't. And then that's when Barbie started slowing down. Barbie showed her courage. She showed her bravery. And after that, slowing down and kind of somewhat banging it out with Bermudez. But Bermudez was just too big and too strong, and she was able to score the better, more telling punches, and that way earning the unanimous decision over Mariana Juarez.
Pretty impressive.
Yeah, and then after the fight, Mariana Juarez mentioned that, you know, she wants to stay in the division. She wants to stay in the division. She wants the rematch with Bermudez. I don't think that's that great of an idea. I think Bermudez proved that she could beat her. Not fairly easily, but in dominating fashion, because, you know, she only won the fight by two rounds and one card and three rounds by the other. But I just don't see what Barbie can do at this point in that weight class to be able to beat this girl. Bermudez, with the win, she obviously becomes the number one challenger for the WBC title, which is held by Catherine Fitty, who we're going to speak about in a little bit. But she didn't really signal that she wanted to go after that. She is the, I believe, the WBA super featherweight champion, or WBO, one of those two. Not super featherweight, super flyweight. So she might be going down to 115 pounds, and she just came up to the 118 to face Juarez, quite possibly make a good purse and come to Mexico and do what exactly she said she was going to do, which was beat Mariana Juarez in her hometown, which she did.
Wow. And you were saying that Suarez is going to actually stay at that weight. Do you think that's a good idea? And how did she look at 118? Do you think she's going to be able to put her mark on that 118, or do you think she's just too small?
I just think, honestly, I just think she's a little bit too small, and more importantly, I think she's past her prime. I think at 30-something years old, 35, 36 years old, she's gotten to the point where even though, like, she can't pull the trigger anymore, at least what I saw in the second half of the fight where, you know, maybe a stronger, younger fighter is gonna be able to beat her. The other Mexican big name in that division is Jasmine La Rosita Rivas, who is also around that age. And, you know, that might be a good fight, but Jasmine Rivas is looking for a rematch with Catherine Fitty, because that same night on August 27th, from the Palenque de la Feria in Gomez Palacio, and the main event on the competing Mexican network. So imagine that in Mexico a couple weekends ago, you had the main event of each of the terrestrial TV networks, the biggest networks in Mexico, had a female fight in the main event.
Wow.
On one, you had Mariana Juarez losing to Daniela Bermudez, and then the other one, you had Jasmine Rivas taking a split decision over Jessica Gonzalez in a 10-rounder for the vacant WBC International Super Bantamweight title. The scores there were 97-94 and 96-94 for Rivas and 96-94 for Gonzalez. There was a rematch of a fight a couple years ago where actually Jessica Gonzalez beat Jasmine Rivas, the former WBC Bantamweight champion. And now with the win, with the loss, Jessica Gonzalez is actually in for a rematch, and she wants the trilogy, whereas Jasmine Rivas has gone out and asked for a rematch with Catherine Fitty, who beat her in a technical decision last January. So will we be able to see Mariana Juarez against Jasmine Rivas? We may not. They're with competing promoters on competing networks. I just don't see Mariana Juarez being able to beat the top echelon of the division.
Oh, that's too bad.
Yeah,
you know, maybe she needs to go back and look for that title at Super Flyweight, which she didn't capture at the WBC. She was the international champion, and the champion there is another Mexican by the name of La Loba Munoz. You know, which they tried to make a fight in the past, but I think because of financial issues, they weren't able to make it. So who knows if she's willing to touch that subject again. But by what she said in her post-fight interview, she said she wanted to stay at Bantamweight. Hopefully in a couple of minutes, we will have WBA and WBC featherweight champion Jelena Miodrovic on the phone line with us. Here on the 2-Minute Round, your hooks and jabs look at the female fight world on the Leave It in the Ring Network. If you'd like to give us a call and talk female boxing, you can at 347-215-7598, 347-215-7598. We're waiting for the phone call from our neighbor up north in Canada, the WBC and WBA featherweight champion, Jelena Miodrovic, who is going to be defending her title in October, and we'll talk all about that with her. On the same night, Saturday, August 27th, we had three important bantamweight division fights. We had Mariana Juarez losing to Daniela Bermudez in a WBC title eliminator. We had Jasmine Rivera defeating, well, actually, that wasn't at bantamweight. They actually weighed in at 119 pounds, which was only a pound over the bantamweight limit. So technically, it was in the bantamweight division or close to it. But then, more importantly, we have the WBC current bantamweight champion, Catherine Fitty, stopping South African Gabisil Tashabalala in the first round of a Schedule 10. The official time there was a minute into the fight.
Wow.
So,
just like that,
Catherine Fitty defended her title. And like I mentioned before, Jasmine Rivas is looking for the rematch, but she might be asking for a little bit more than she can chew, because as we saw when she lost the title to Catherine Fitty, you know, Catherine Fitty pretty much beat her to the punch the whole night until Jasmine Rivas suffered that cut over her eye, which forced the referee to stop the fight. And now Fitty stopping this Gabisil Tashabalala. Not that Tashabalala was a world player, but, I mean, you know, she couldn't have been that bad to be challenging for a title, and then she gets stopped in a minute into the fight. That says something. And then, like I mentioned, too, in the beginning of the fight results, Carolina Duer stopped Aline de Casias Carnelo in the same division in the seventh round of a Schedule 10. And on Saturday, September 3rd, another bantamweight player from Mexico, Irma La Torbellina Garcia, scored a unanimous decision over Ana María Lozano in a Schedule 8 rounder from Atzipan de Zaragoza, Mexico. And that was also televised, although not in the main event, on Televisa on Saturday, September 3rd. What you think of that fight, David?
I thought that Irma Garcia was a very technical fighter. It was a lefty versus righty. She doesn't hit very hard. There was a lot of holding because they were tangled up. And so there wasn't much action. There was a lot of touches, but not much power punches. Garcia, I thought, won the fight. But I don't know if she could handle those other girls. They seem to be another level, even including Mariana Juarez. They all seem to be another level above her. If they were to fight, I think she's not ready.
Irma Garcia, a police officer during the day, did hold a WBC international title for some time beforehand, and she's kind of getting back into the mix here. So, I mean, it was on Televisa, so that would be Promociones del Pueblo, so maybe she can get in the ring with Mariana Juarez, and if that's the case, like you say, David, and maybe she's not the top echelon of the division, maybe Mariana Juarez can actually get another fight with a known opponent on TV and kind of touch the waters again at bantamweight.
Yeah, that would be a good fight for her, I think.
I think that'd be a smarter fight for sure.
Mm. Yeah, if I was a promoter, that's the fight I'd make.
Yeah. Well, we'll see. I mean, hopefully they listen to the show and they put that fight together, because I mean, Irma Garcia is a known entity. I mean, she's a great story, a police officer during the day. So, you know, she does get a little bit of press and stuff like that. Not obviously as much as Mariana Juarez, but people do know her and she fights on TV. So, you know, that's maybe a fight that they should make. We are waiting for the call from our special guest this week, Jelena Mayordovic, the WBC and WBA featherweight champion, who will be defending her title in October. She is supposed to call us any minute here, so we are waiting for her call. But that has brought us to the end of the fight results, so we're going to move on to a little bit of female fight chatter. And I might be a little bit late on the bandwagon here, but I did have the opportunity, and if you guys have not had the chance to watch this documentary about Clarissa Shields, now the two-time Olympic gold medalist for the United States at close to middleweight. I think it's a little bit over middleweight, the actual division that she was fighting in the Olympics. It is available on Netflix, and that's where I was able to watch it. And I found it very interesting because, like, I don't know if you guys listened to last show, Elena and I had a pretty, I would say, heated conversation about Clarissa's chances at gaining some
exposure,
some following, some exposure as a professional. And I really urge you, Elena, to watch this documentary, because
yes,
it kind of proves my point where. It's kind of hard for a fighter in her division, and it's not so much her division or her weight class, but there's something about her that I don't think grabs people. Maybe more now that she has become the two-time Olympic gold medalist, and the same females that were with her in that first team in 2012, we're here now. Like Queen, what's her name, David? Queen
Underwood.
Queen Underwood wasn't at the 2016. Neither was Marlene Esparza, who got a little bit more exposure than Clarissa did in 2012. And now Clarissa is basically the only one to really I think she was the only. Oh no, the other female that we're trying to get on here. What was her name? David, Michaela.
Oh, Michaela Mayer.
She won a medal as well, right?
No, she did a medal. She lost on the fight that would have gave her a medal, but there was some controversy. Many people thought she won the fight, and they fired some judges from the boxing tournament at the Olympics in Rio. It could have been part of the reason Michaela Mayer didn't win, but it's one of those things that, you know, it's those tentacles on boxing are so widespread. There's a lot of problems with judging there, a lot of problems.
Yeah.
We'll talk to Michaela when we get her on the show, or probably on the next show.
Okay. Well, let me text Jelena Rivenko. But let me tell you a little bit about the documentary, because I found it really interesting, and Elena could kind of touch a little bit more, even though she mentioned she has not seen the documentary yet. But you could kind of touch on it, because I really saw it as a microcosm of boxing, or the career of a boxer, even though she's an amateur. You know, I'm sure you guys are pretty familiar. You read about her, and we follow her story. But she comes from very humble beginnings in Flint, Michigan, a broken home. Her mom has some issues with substance abuse and things like that. She went to a boxing gym, which is all documented here on the documentary. Actually, I think that we have Jelena on right now, so I'll continue the story because I really want to get your opinion on this, Elena. Let me patch in Jelena right here. Hi, is this Jelena?
Hi. So sorry I'm late calling in. We had our fighters just had weigh-ins, so.
No problem, Jelena. Thank you. And we have been promoting here on the 2-Minute Round, with us now is the WBC and WBA featherweight champion, Jelena Miranovic of Canada. Jelena, thank you for being on the show here, the 2-Minute Round.
Of course. Yeah, thanks for having me.
Well, Jelena, like I mentioned to you in our little talk before we had you on, with us is our co-host David Avila, and as well former fighter Elena Baby Doll Reed. So I'll pass the mic to David, and he'll start off the interview with you. Go ahead, David.
Hi, Jelena. How are you?
Good. How's it going?
Not bad. How's the feeling about going to France to fight to defend your two world titles? Did you have to take this fight, or did you take it because you just want to prove something?
You know, the France and Gail Amand's people contacted us, and they wanted the fight. And you know, it's an exciting fight for me because she is undefeated. I believe she's 16-0 or 14-0. I'm not sure. So, you know, fighting undefeated fighters are always exciting, and I think it's a great matchup. It's a good step up for her. You know, I come with a lot of experience, but and fighting in anyone's hometown is always exciting and fun for me. You know, I can say I've been on both ends of the stick, where I've won in other people's hometowns and I have also lost. But taking that challenge of going on the road is always something that I enjoy doing in my career.
Jelena, you fought everybody. I mean, you fought a who's who of the female fight world, from Layla McCarter to Melissa Hernandez. I mean, you have fought everybody, that every dangerous fighter I can imagine. What's your experience been like fighting those skilled fighters? What did you take from it?
You know, well, I mean, when you've been around as long as I have, you're bound to fight everybody at some point in time. So, you know, every fight I've learned something different from each opponent, be it the experienced fighters, be it the unexperienced ones who take fights last minute. I've been very fortunate in my career that I've had a great learning curve, and I'm still constantly learning. This will be my 48th fight, I believe. So, and I think, and like I said, I'm still learning. So I think as that, as long as that's progressing, I'm going to keep becoming a better fighter and maturing even more as a fighter. You know, I learned a lot from each opponent that I had. You know, Layla McCarter was slick, as was Melissa Hernandez. You know, Ann Saccarato, she was a lot bigger than me, so I learned something from that. Mia St. John came with a lot of experience. So, yeah, when you think back of all the opponents I've had and the different things that they came, I've definitely learned a lot.
I know when I was speaking to Melissa about a year ago, she mentioned that she considered you number one or number two pound for pound. And, I mean, that,
wow,
to me,
coming,
that was a big compliment.
That coming,
like,
from her, yeah, that coming from her is a big compliment. And you know, we've had a couple battles here in Alberta and Edmonton, and, you know, she always comes to fight, and it's always exciting. So she's a friend and an opponent, so that's a great compliment.
Elena, did you have any questions?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I lived in Vegas for most of my pro career, and we had quite a few people from Canada down there boxing with us. We had Baya Zaganis, Mandy LaPointe, Jessica Raposi, and they all moved to Vegas for more exposure in boxing. And I see, I'm not sure, I imagine that you have a promoter out there in Canada, but have you ever thought about moving to the States to progress your career?
You know, I get asked that a lot. The thing is because I've had most of my career here in Edmonton, we've been fortunate enough to get quite a bit of following here. I mean, I've had a lot of my fights. I know everybody was excited that Heather Hardy's fight was broadcast on national TV. We've had a lot of my fights broadcast across Canada.
Great.
You know, we had a contract with them. So we were fortunate enough that I had the fans of Edmonton and Canada kind of get behind me, and I've been lucky enough that I've been able to stay at home with my promoters, KO Boxing, and my coach, who's been my coach my entire career here in Edmonton. We did go down to Top Rank for my last training camp. We were down there for about 4 weeks, and we did training down there, And it's just hard. I think women's boxing in the U.S. is still
not so great.
Gaining that. Yeah, it's still gaining that exposure. It's not quite there yet, but, you know, a couple of the girls in L.A. and you know, Heather Hardy in New York are starting to build that momentum, and that's what we need, is that exposure and exciting fights. We need great matchups with exciting fights. And I think that's what women's boxing is missing in the States. And once it captivates and captures the audience there, then it's going to be more mainstream, and it's going to really, I think it's going to blow up like the MMA and the UFC did.
Yeah. You know, my second question really was, you know, how are you received in Canada? And do people know you, like, when you walk down the street? Are you a local celebrity out there? Like, do they treat you like they should treat you as a champion?
Yes and no. Like, I think that's a tough thing with female sports in general.
Yeah.
You know, unless you're Venus or Serena Williams or someone like that, it is tough to get that notoriety, I think, as a quote unquote celebrity. But at sporting events, I'm definitely recognized here. Here and there I am. You know, but it's by no means the same, I think, as any of the male counterparts that we have. So, you know what's funny is actually in Mexico, I think I get noticed more than I do in Canada or the States.
No, we believe that. We're just talking about how women's boxing, Mexico or Argentina, are, you know, kind of a tie for that number one spot where women's boxing is popular. I guess, you know, after kind of going there, my question leads to, you have fought for a long time. You know, I've already retired and, you know, done other things. And I think I started just before you, not too much longer before you did I turn pro. And you fought everyone and you've done everything. Like, what are your goals? Do you see yourself as, like, you're just an athlete wanting to get better, or is there that goal of, you know, finally getting that notoriety that you deserve? What are you looking to do, and what are you looking to get out of boxing?
Well, like I mentioned, this will be my 48th fight in France.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
You know, I definitely want to hit that 50 mark for sure. But, you know, one of my I tend to make kind of short-term goals. That way, you know, they're achievable. And then once you hit that goal, you get to move on to another one. And so, you know, my goal last fight was to recapture my title and become a WBA champion as well. I've been a WBC world champion for a decade. So for 10 years, I have been a part of, off and on, a part of the WBC. And they're amazing. And, you know, you couldn't ask to be a part of a better family. But in March, I captured the WBA title. So there's always different goals that I do have. I want to defend my title on the road in France against an undefeated fighter, which is exciting for me. That's a different goal right there. Whenever you fight an undefeated fighter, you always have that extra challenge because they, not like you ever learn how to lose. I'm uber competitive and I've had, you know, 10 losses and I still don't know how to lose like gracefully. So, but you know, undefeated fighters don't know how to quit. And that's something that always is exciting because they've never experienced that. And to hand that to them is, that first loss is always kind of exciting. So,
yeah. Very cool.
You know, and after my next goal would be, I want to defend my title, and then, you know, if I can and if my body will allow me, I would like to maybe potentially drop to 122 pounds and fight for another title, because I have gone I started at lightweight, so when I've gone kind of reverse. I've done opposite as everybody else normally does in boxing as they've gotten older, and that's also because I enjoy challenging myself. So I would love to be a four-division champion backwards, if you know, if that's possible. I don't even know if anybody's ever done that, but you know, that would be a lot of work and a huge challenge, but that's probably my long-term end kind of goal. So
no, that's great. And of course, you know, you've had so many fights, so what would you say that your favorite fight's been? And then also, do you have a dream fight? Is there a girl out there that you're really wanting to compete against?
My dream fight? It's tough. I mean, I always want to fight anybody who's top one or two in the world. So, you know, anytime there's a new challenger, that's what I want, right?
Yeah.
You know, right now Amanda Serrano's definitely in the crosshairs, as she's the WBO champion.
Oh, that'd be a great fight. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think so. And we've tried to make that fight happen a number of years ago, actually. And for some reason, their people and our people couldn't get come to an agreement. I think they didn't have a promoter, and they couldn't. Someone in the camp couldn't come to Canada, so it was a challenge. And I, so it's definitely one that we've always wanted to make happen. She's definitely, like I said, in the crosshairs. You know, I like the things that Heather Hardy's doing. She's a little bit smaller than me, but that's maybe when I drop down to 122. You know, you never know. There's a lot of girls out there that are up and coming, and you know, I kind of just have to watch my back, being that I am, you know, 50 fights or 48 fights in, and still going. You know, you always got to watch the backs who's coming up the ranks.
Yeah, no, definitely. No, I just want to, you really answered all my questions, and it's great to see that your longevity as a fighter and that you're still so healthy and still doing well. But, you know, I just wish you the best of luck in all that you do, and because, you know, we're all watching you. I think, like I said, I think it's amazing that you're still going strong, and it looks like there's no end coming near. You know, it looks like you're going to have a great career for many years to come.
Great. Thank you. I have to say, when I first started, I definitely was, you know, when I started boxing, I was new to the sport. I just picked it up kind of by accident. And I definitely looked up some of your fights, and I kind of watched you and watched you go through the ranks until you retired. So, I mean, it's exciting to talk to you as well. It's nice to see that the people who, you know, I watched and who started around the same time as me are still in the sport. So, you know, it's great to hear from you and hear that you're doing well.
Oh, thank you. It means a lot. I always hog all the interviews, so I'm definitely going to let them get it over. But like I said, we'll be watching you and have so much fun in France. You know, my last fight was out there, and it is really nice. And just, you know, do your thing. Hopefully you get a knockout out there. That'd be pretty cool.
That's the goal. If it happens, it happens. But if not, we'll hopefully just beat her up enough to get a win there.
Yeah.
Well, let's keep the praise party going, and I want to say, you know, when I went to the first, I had the opportunity to go to the first WBC female convention in Cancun or Playa del Carmen, and the one picture that I had to have was with Yelena Miranovic, one of my favorite fighters. I think you're a true. What's that?
That was a great event. The WBC always puts on a good show, and that was a great event for female boxing. Yeah.
Yes, it was. And to have all those female fighters and all those female champs under the same roof, it was, you know, for somebody that's a big female boxing fan, that was a treat, because we got to see, you know, Yelena from Canada, the Japanese champions, Argentinian champions. I mean, everybody was there, and that was a treat. And I believe you're a true champion, because you're willing to travel and defend your title, which you're going to be doing in October 10th in France, when you're going to be traveling to near Paris and defending your title against Gael Armand.
Gael Armand.
As a champion, you know, you have your promoter and everything, but they must have made a significant offer to get you to go all the way to Paris. Is that the case?
You know, it was a different challenge. We definitely have a challenge getting people to now want to come to Edmonton. And so we always take the opportunities that we get that come. And so, yeah, they stepped up. They gave us a great offer. It's a good fight matchup, like stylistically. She's also undefeated, which is something that is also poses definitely a bonus for me, and excitement for me. So, you know, I think given this point in time in my career, it has to make sense for us. And you know, Gail, yeah, she doesn't have a lot of experience comparatively, but she does come to fight, and that's what I find is exciting. You know, my last two fights versus Edith Soledad Matisse, she ran, and that wasn't exciting for me. I think the thing with women's boxing, and one of the things that we need to keep the momentum going on, is the fact that we need exciting fights. And mm-hmm. I think this one's going to be fireworks. Either way, she comes to fight, I don't know how to slow down. So, you know, it should be stylistically a great matchup.
Now, in preparation for this interview, I did look up Armand, and there isn't a lot of stuff on her on the internet. It's really hard to get where she's coming from and see some footage of her. But what I did find is that, you know, she has a pretty educated right hand. It seems like that's her favorite punch. Even though she only has one knockout in 14 wins, is that something that you're working on? Is that something that you need to look out for when you face her on October 10th?
You know, I don't do my thing that I usually do, and it's, you know, every fighter is a little different. I watch my opponent's tapes probably once or twice, and then my trainer, Milan Lubovac, watches the tape, and then he tailors training around that. My theory is I come in you know, being the bigger fighter, the bigger puncher, and the world champion. So I think that they should tailor their training around me. And I just have to be me, and I have to be the best me I can be that night. And if I do that, and if I execute that, then I should be okay. You know, I have no idea. I just do as my trainer says. And so I don't know if he's kind of tailoring around a right hand. You know, if you've seen any tapes on me or my big knockout, if you have a good right hand, that's great for me because I'm going to punch with you and I'm probably going to hit you with my left hook. So that's great. Bombs away. And let's see. Let's hope I get there first.
Now, let's go back to August of 2015, another fight that you traveled for. This time you went to Buenos Aires, Argentina to defend your WBC title and challenge for the WBA featherweight title against the fighter that you mentioned, Edith Soledad Matisse. How was it over there? And what did you think of the decision? And you know, as we all know, not only in female boxing, but as well as the male boxing, it's really hard to win in Argentina unless you knock the fighter out. So what were your thoughts before and after that fight as far as going in and knowing what you needed to do there, and then after that decision, which you ended up losing a unanimous decision to Matisse?
Right. You know, I went full well knowing that I would have to, A, either knock her out or B, you know, basically beat her like next to a knockout to win that fight. And, you know, we had some challenges along the way in the camp. You know, I had a couple of nagging injuries and I couldn't do the things I really wanted to do in training camp. I think that translated in the fight. I ended up being a little flat. And I came out, even though I think I came out a little flat and not quite myself, I still thought with the WBC, you have the chance to have open scoring in the corners. And so we have the scoring after the fourth round and after the eighth round. And we got the scores after the fourth round, and we thought we were actually up 3-1 rounds or even worst case scenario. And they had us down 4-0. And so we were quite shocked. And, you know, the minute that scoring came out, Matisse got on her horse and basically ran the rest of the fight, which definitely dictated that fight. And you know, even though I've watched it a few times now, you know, I definitely don't think the scores were as wide as much of a margin as they gave us. I thought it was closer, but, you know, I did lose the last few rounds trying to catch her because I knew that was the only way I could win. So I was jumping in and trying to catch basically a horse, like a person who was on a horse riding around the ring. Like, there was points in that fight where I stood in the middle of the ring and put my hands down and was like, come on, please fight. Like, this is not what boxing's about, you know? And kudos to her for keeping her game plan, and she executed a great game plan where I didn't that night. I just, you know, I was probably, it was probably one of my worst performances I've had in a while, and it was frustrating. It was really frustrating because we didn't go all that way to lose. I mean, nobody does. And I didn't go all that way to have a disappointing performance. So, it was definitely frustrating and disheartening and a hard pill to swallow. You know, we had them back in March in Edmonton, and we had to definitely pay through the nose to get them here. And there was no way I was letting her leave Edmonton without decisively winning a decision here.
So, what did you have to do in that second fight? I can't answer my second question, which is how hard was it to get her to come to Canada? And you told us how you had to pay through the nose to get her there. But what did you know that you had to do in the second fight to be able to recapture your title and then get her WBA title as well?
You know, I knew that I would have to the most important thing, I think, and especially at my age with the amount of fights that I do have, is staying injury-free. And normally, knock on wood, I never have an issue with that. And so you know, when we were planning on when we were in camp for Argentina the first time, you know, I had some kind of nagging injuries during my strength and conditioning then. So what we did is for the March fight, we just went back to basics. You know, we did more road work. We tried to get my body just to work properly, you know, like some of my muscles weren't firing properly because of just overuse and overcompensation. And so I did a lot of physio. I worked more closely with my team at River Valley Health, the base, and they do all of my treatment and my training now, and everything's in one spot. And so I think that was key, whereas I was training one place, getting treatment another place, and nobody was really communicating. So this one, you know, we made sure I was really healthy, and I ran. Like, I ran lots. We went to Vegas. I was running with Jorge Linares. He's WBC lightweight champion, and he's a good friend of mine. And I did all of my conditioning with him down there, and believe me, like, trying to chase Jorge was a workout in its own, never mind boxing. Like, I was every day, I was like, I think I'm getting faster, and Jorge was getting in better shape too, and I was like, no, not getting faster. I was like, every day was a mental battle chasing Jorge as fast as I could. So, you know, that was great. I had, you know, in Vegas, we had some of the best sparring I've had, which I think was key, and just really getting used to running in case she decided to run again, getting used to all different looks with sparring and training. And you know, Milan, my coach, kind of took me aside, and we had a little talk, and he said, all you need to do is show up. He goes, we didn't show up in Argentina, and all you need to do is show up. We've trained as hard as we can, and you need to enjoy the fight. And I came out in that fight, and the first four rounds, I was nervous, which I hadn't experienced that in a long time. And I started, it's like we continued the fight in Argentina a little bit. I started a little slow, I was a little hesitant, started running a bit. And then, you know, I got my head out of my ass and actually fought the way I should fight and decisively won, I think, from round five on with a knockdown. And I think I won a couple rounds in the beginning, but I wasn't fighting the way I wanted to initially. But, you know, once I relaxed and you know, started hitting the body and cutting her off, the fight was a completely different fight. And that's the thing with me is once I execute my game plan, as long as I can stick to that, I don't think there's anybody in the world that can beat me at my weight. And that's the benefit that I have because I am a puncher. So I know how to box given the amount of experience that I do have, but you also have to worry for my power, and especially in the later rounds when fighters are tiring. And that's just something that I've naturally had, and we've worked on it, and I've developed, and so I'm very fortunate that I always have that backup, like, cannon in the back in the later rounds. So, you know, I've been fortunate that way.
Yeah, you were able to drop her in the late, I think it was either the ninth or tenth round, you were able to drop her and kind of prove that even though she did get up. And I'm kind of glad you executed your game plan because I'm not going to confirm or deny this, but I did place a bet with a friend of mine and I ended up winning because you won that fight. So,
excellent. I like to hear that.
Yeah. Okay. You mentioned Amanda Serrano. And you mentioned that you guys tried to make that fight some years ago, but now I think you have a little bit more leverage being the WBA and WBC featherweight champion, kind of more enticing for her to travel up to Canada and put up her WBO title. Is that something that you think about, your legacy as far as becoming, you know, an undisputed featherweight champion? I know you mentioned going down to 122, but for you, what's more important, that fourth title in four divisions or maybe unifying the division against Amanda Serrano and perhaps even Jennifer Han, the IBF featherweight champion?
You know, why can't I have it all? Why can't I do both of them? So, you know, for me, it's like, that may be greedy of me, but I want to do it all. And that's why I am where I'm at, is because I just want to, I want to do everything, have everything, and be everything all at the same time. And that's how I challenge myself. I know that's definitely greedy, but, you know, these girls have titles, so they're world champions in their own right. And I want that. I want to have every belt, every title, and I want to challenge the best. So, you know, according to the WBO, Amanda Serrano is their champion. Well, I want to be their champion too. So I've just never had an opportunity to fight for the WBO. They've never sanctioned us to fight for their title. Otherwise, I'm sure I would have it too. You know, like, I think that's a great fight. And I think the thing with women's boxing and what we need is these kinds of matchups. And that's what's going to get us the exposure that we need and the notoriety that we need. And it's absolutely something I want to happen. You know, I don't want to go, you know, even say I drop down to 122, I don't want to fight someone who's ranked in the bottom under number five. I want to fight the number one girl in that division. I want to fight the WBC world champion at 122. If my body lets me go down to 122, you know, so these are the kind of goals that I set for myself. So, you know, when you ask me which is more important, well, they're both important, but I think at different times. Right now, I'm a featherweight champion. I plan on keeping this title for the rest of my career. If I do make an appearance at 122, it will just, like I said, be an appearance, win a title, and then, you know, maybe that's my final swan song. Who knows? But I don't know. I still am loving what I do. I'm feeling very strong and very capable at featherweight, and I still feel like there's good fights to happen. So I'm happy here for now.
Well, David, Elena, any other questions?
Yes, I wanted to ask you. I've been hearing that Amanda Serrano wanted to drop down to 122 also to get a title at that weight. It seems like a natural fight between you two. Since she wants to drop down, you can drop down.
Absolutely, right? I mean, anyway, then it doesn't matter whether we fight at 22 or 26, right? So,
exactly.
I mean, like I said, we wanted the fight to happen. I have a lot of respect for Amanda Serrano. She fights on the road a lot as well. And I think she's a great fighter. And like I said, I want to be the best by fighting the best. And so that's why I take these challenges and take these fights like in Argentina, like in Japan and things like that. So, you know, if we can somehow, if our camps can talk and make something happen, that's amazing. You know, and until that time happens, everything happens for a reason. And I believe that, and I've been a firm believer in that. And so when it's meant to happen, it will happen.
Yeah, I hope you have good luck in France.
Thank you.
Well, Jelena, we would like to thank you for being here with us on the 2-minute round. It's very refreshing to hear a champion say, hey, I want to fight this girl, Amanda Serrano, mm-hmm. whoever it is. You know, sometimes we get female boxers or even boxers in general, male or female, and they're like, well, I don't like to call people out, but when you're a champion, you want to fight the best, and she is one of the best, and you're one of the best, and it's refreshing to hear somebody say, hey, it's going to happen, I wanted it to happen, when, we just got to get together and talk about it, but it has to happen because we're both champions, and that fight needs to happen. So that's very refreshing to hear, and also we'd like to thank you because we know we're going through some personal hard times, and we would like to thank you for taking the time to be with us here on the 2-minute round.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's I always enjoy talking about the sport, and I'm very passionate about boxing. So, you know, thanks for having me on.
Thank you. Well, hopefully after your fight, we can get to get you back on here. You could tell us all about Paris and crepes and escargot and all that.
After when I can eat crepes, then I'll definitely sample as many as I can.
All right. Well, have a good night, Elena.
Good night. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye bye.
Good night. Bye.
Bye bye. And well, there you have it, folks, the WBA and WBC featherweight champion, Jelena Mijatović, here on the 2-minute round, your hooks and jabs look at the female fight world. And it just starts getting better and better. I mean, we've had, you know, a bunch of fighters, Heather Hardy, Christy Martin, And now Jelena Marinovich, and hopefully we start getting better and better guests. Not that you can get better than the WBA, WBC featherweight champ, but, you know, just different guests. So we want to thank her because she is going through some tough times personally with her family. Nothing serious. I mean, yeah, kind of serious, but, I mean, I'm not going to actually divulge it. But, but you know, it was great for her to be with us. Going back to the conversation that we were having before that great interview with Jelena, as far as that documentary with T-Rex, I mean, that documentary called T-Rex about Clarissa Shields and her trip to the first 2012, well, the first time that female boxing was included in the Olympics in London in 2012. And like I mentioned, you know, she comes from humble beginnings, Flint, Michigan. Or is it Flint? It's Flint, right? Not, it's Flint, right, David?
Yes.
Yeah, Flint. And, her, you know, her a broken home, kind of. The mom, you know, I'm not saying anything that's a secret. Her mom had some substance abuse. And actually, Carissa, that's kind of, she wanted to do something different. She wanted to get off the streets, and she ended up in a boxing gym. She became great friends with a trainer who, obviously, I forgot his name, and he took her in. But you see her as a 17-year-old. You know, she wants to have a boyfriend. The trainer doesn't want her to have a boyfriend. She has a boyfriend behind his back. There's no money. The USA Boxing was giving her some money, but it wasn't enough. So then all she wanted to do was go to the Olympics and win a gold medal so that she could get some sponsorship and make some money, because she was seeing all these other girls get sponsors like Marlene and Queen and all this stuff. Very competitive, very hard on herself. The documentary opens up with her winning an amateur fight locally there in Flint, but she didn't win by the score that she wanted to win, and she was being hard on herself. I think it was one of the qualifying fights. And then she goes to the Olympics, and she when she shows up at the Olympics, she was 24-0. But because of the rules of USA Boxing, her actual coach was not allowed to be with her in the Olympics in her corner. So she can't. She's not really jiving with the coaches there, and but she ends up. I think she lost her first fight in the Olympics. But then if the girl.
No,
she fought her first fight in the qualifier, right, in China.
Yeah,
She lost her first. She went to qualify for the Olympics in China,
oh,
I believe. She was 24-0, and she lost her first fight. She lost her first fight there. But then I think that if the girl that beat her ended up winning her next couple of fights, Clarissa was still qualified for Olympics, and that's what happened. And then the Olympics, she ended up winning her fights, and she won the gold medal. That's what happened, okay? And at the Olympics, her coach wasn't able to go with her to that qualifying fight in China, so she loses without her coach. So she comes back, and she's kind of resentful with her coach because he wasn't there, so she kind of like half-heartedly blames him for the loss. But then when they go to the Olympics, basically she follows her coach's instructions from the stands and not the USA Boxing instructions, and she ends up winning the gold medal and things like that. So she gets back from the Olympics. She thinks she hit the mother lode because she won the gold medal, and lo and behold, because of the way she is and some comments that she made as far as, which were honest. I mean, she said, why do I like boxing? I like hitting people. That's honest. And it's not the first female fighter or the first male fighter who has ever said that the reason they like to box is because they like to hit people, you know? But USA Boxing kind of advised her not to say things like that because she was kind of confused why she wasn't getting sponsorship offers like the rest of the female fighters were. So it's really interesting because for me it was a microcosm of boxer's life, even though she's not a professional. But the issues with money, the issues with her family, the issues with her coach, the issues with her quote-unquote, in this case, not promoter, but the organization that she's technically fighting for, which is USA Boxing, the issues with sponsorships and stuff like that. And you can kind of see all the things that a boxer has to go through it's not just about getting in the ring. It's about training. It's about having these relationships and to make money, even at an amateur level, so that she could provide with her for her family, you know. And I found it very interesting, and I want to kind of take your get your take, Elena. I know that you have not seen the documentary, and I really urge you and David to get a chance to look at it so you can see it, because I also felt – and this is a, kind of like the continuation, even though without me knowing it, but now I see it, is that I don't want to say she has a little bit of chip on her shoulder, but she has a little bit of a chip on her shoulder, and it kind of comes across, and it kind of comes across, and maybe that's what the sponsorships have seen as well, and maybe that's why at that point, and I don't know if she's doing better in that, because she's only 21, 22 years old. I mean, she has the opportunity to go for a third gold medal in 4 years. And she's going to be young. She's going to be 25, 26, you know. Yeah. And I don't know if where she's at now, being a two-time gold medalist, if she's in the same position as she was after that Olympic, where she was not getting the quote-unquote love that she expected, seeing the other female fighters getting that kind of support. So,
Go ahead.
No, what I wanted to get is your take kind of like on those different relationships that as a fighter you have to have. I mean, I'm not, you never mentioned, I don't know if you managed yourself when you were a pro or you actually had a manager that would deal with, you know, the business side of boxing, but you still, he still has to touch bases with you and ask you, what do you think about this, Elena? What do you think about that? So what was your take as far as when you were fighting about the other stuff that a boxer needs to worry about away from the gym and away from training, but like the relationships that you have to have with your trainer, the business side of the sport?
You know, first I just want to say, I think Clarissa is getting on the Wheaties box, isn't she? Either they're trying to get her on or she is on, but I'm pretty sure she is getting more sponsorships this time. But as far as myself and, you know, I knew David for a long time, and I had managers here and there. Steve Dash, who is out of California right now, was my probably longest manager towards the end. But my uncle was kind of an acting manager. But I made a lot of my own decisions. Like, they would help me, but a lot of people called me. I did a lot of my own business, to be honest with you, which bad or good, like, there just wasn't the money behind women, so a lot of people didn't want to help us because they weren't going to make money off of us. but a lot of those things came natural to me as far as in, like, being in front of the public eye and, you know, and honestly, I am a thankful person and I am happy. So those things were just all very natural. You know, even to this day, I just have a lot of energy. So no, I didn't have a manager who had to tell me those things or, someone who had to tell me how to dress or how to be. Of course, you hear people talking about it and if you get to know me, you'll know that I do research on everything. I want to be the best person that I can be in anything that I do. And that entails knowing what that takes. And so, no, I didn't have a manager, but maybe someone, I also had a different upbringing than Clarissa Shields did. You know, I still have a very loving family around me. I was fortunate enough to go to, you know, Catholic school from, you know, kindergarten through high school. And so it's just different. And I think it is sad that Clarissa Shields, you know, she doesn't, and hopefully she is getting the sponsorship now, and she does have a chip on her shoulder. But I think that if people, and I'm definitely going to watch this Netflix, like, believe that for sure. But I think if people knew the whole circle, you know, like knew all about her life and maybe why she does have a chip on her shoulder, people would be like, you know what, she deserves to have a chip on her shoulder. She's a fighter. And that's the thing, you know, we have so Floyd Mayweather, right? He's from Michigan. And he also, you could say, has a chip on his shoulder and has done a lot of things that maybe, you know, hopefully he's not proud of. But people love, hate him, whatever, like we can kind of know his story because he's out there in the public eye. So I believe this Netflix has been, I can't wait to watch it, is a U-tell. So I might see it in a different way. I think once I know more about her, I can accept her and accept the way that she is and still want to get behind her. Does that make sense?
Yes. Yes, and I think we should. That's the homework for you and David and the rest of our listeners. Watch that documentary if you have not seen it, and then we can talk about it on the next show. One thing that I can say is that she's a phenomenal fighter. Phenomenal. I mean, very competitive, very aggressive, and she really lands punches with bad intentions. Great combinations, and you get to see that a lot in the documentary. And you also get to see that other side of her, that for a 17-year-old at that time, you know, there were a lot of things to deal with. I mean, her family life at home, it's a little tough, you know, and she tries to be the peacemaker between these different parts of her family, and she's in the middle, and maybe it's not something that she should be focusing on before the Olympics, but she needs to do it because she wants her family there. So it's very interesting. It's very interesting, and I do urge you to watch it, and maybe we can talk a little bit more about it on the next show, which will be on September 22nd. Moving on to.
I have one more thing to add real fast before we move on.
Go ahead.
I talked to my husband, of course, we talked about everything. So we brought Clarissa Shields up. And he brought up like a really valid point, and we were kind of talking about everything in the last show. And he's like, yeah, right. Do you remember Ann Wolf? And so she kind of reminds me in some ways of Ann Wolf. Like, I don't know. I can never forget, like, Ann Wolf's, like, knockout. But she has power, and she's scary, like, as, you know, a boxer. So it wasn't just, like, seeing her knockout and you're like, wow, what a great knockout for a female. It's like, holy smokes. Like, that girl just looks at, like, exciting knockouts. And so, you know, she never got the notoriety that she probably deserved. But that's kind of, I see similarities between the two of them.
But see, that's the thing. Like, to me, like, when I think of Ann Wolf, and she's a great trainer, and she was a great fighter, but when I think of Ann Wolf, I think of Mike Tyson. I mean, that type of ferocity, that type of aggressiveness. But are we ready as fight fans or as boxing fans for a female Mike Tyson? I want to see it. I definitely want to see it. I want to see that bad, that Mike Tyson, I'm going to rip your heart out, eat your children type of fighter, because I love Mike Tyson, and I want to see that in a female, and that's who Ann Wolf was, you know, and that's what I want to see now. I want to see that Clarissa Shields to say, I'm going to eat your heart out, I'm going to rip your heart out and eat your I want to see it, but is the rest of the boxing world ready for that? That we don't know, you know, and maybe Clarissa is not, I mean, she's not Mike Tyson, I don't think she's as aggressive with that Mike Tyson as Mike Tyson was at that time, but she is aggressive, but I want to see it. But does the rest of the boxing world need to see it or want to see it? That's the question here. David, your thoughts? You've been kind of quiet.
No, I think what Aletta said about comparing her to Ann Wolf is spot on, because I thought the same thing. That she reminds me of Ann Wolf. She's got the power. She has speed. She intimidates the other fighters. And I actually honestly think she's unbeatable. If she were to go pro, she'd be unbeatable. I don't think anybody in the pro ranks could beat her. And
yeah, I think so, too.
One.
Yeah.
I
she's pretty
she's
phenomenal.
She's unbeatable.
Yeah.
I think she has a better chance of losing as an amateur because there's only three rounds.
Yeah, and you're gonna when you watch a documentary, you're gonna see maybe some of the reasons that she has not turned pro as of right now. Maybe she does want to go after that third gold medal and kind of squeeze the whole sponsorship amateur program as much as you can. And you guys are gonna see that in the documentary. So hopefully you guys can watch it and we can talk about it a little bit more on the next show, September 22nd. Moving on to our next topic on the female fight chatter. Like we mentioned a couple of shows ago, when Christy Martin was with us, she is going to start a new phase of her career now as a promoter. She is going to be promoting her first show on October 19th. In the fight card will feature NABF vacant bantamweight title fight between Rosalinda Rodriguez and Noemi Bosquez at bantamweight. So there's another couple other fighters who the winner of that fight is going to be ranked in the top 10 for the WBC as the NABF champion. So there's a couple other female fighters that might get into that mix at that 118 division, which is starting to get really hot. The bantamweight division and the the flyweight division and the featherweight division are starting to heat up in the female boxing world. So the winner of this fight for the vacant NABF title is going to be ranked in the top 10. But the other nice thing about this fight event is that part of the proceeds, and I believe also they are asking for donations so that they for school supplies, so they could donate them to the local kids there in Charlotte, North Carolina. So that is kind of nice for Christy Martin to put that together, and also being that she's a substitute teacher, which she shared with us on that interview a couple episodes ago. I think that was something to touch on, and obviously we will be mentioning this a lot more as the fight nears, or the fight card nears, so that we could give some support to Christy Martin and to this great cause with her company called Pink Promotions. That's the name of her boxing promotional company. And the WBC, we have touched on this subject before, but now it has become official. The WBC has ordered the rematch between Jessica Chavez and Esmeralda Moreno. Jessica Chavez is a WBC flyweight champion. They fought back, I think it was in June, and it was a very close fight. Esmeralda Moreno was nowhere near happy with the decision, and from that moment on, she began to petition the WBC and its president, Mauricio Suleiman, for a review of the fight and an immediate rematch. Well, they did the review, but she did not get the immediate rematch. The WBC ordered that Jessica Chavez has a right for a voluntary defense, and then after that, she would have to defend against Esmeralda Moreno. So actually, that fight, which is a very close fight and a fight of the year candidate, a female fight of the year candidate, we're probably going to see it before the end of the year, or if not early next year, depending how soon Jessica Chavez can do that voluntary defense. Or maybe Jessica Chavez just says, hey, let's just do it. I don't need voluntary defense. Let's just do it. And actually, after the rematch was ordered, a couple days later, I think it was either yesterday or today, Promociones del Pueblo, which is quite possibly the biggest promoter. Well, Sanford is probably the biggest promoter in Mexico, but Promociones del Pueblo is clearly the biggest female boxing promoter in Mexico. They actually signed Esmeralda Moreno to an exclusive promotional contract. So now Jessica Chavez and Esmeralda Moreno are under the same banner. So obviously it makes it a lot easier to make that fight. Others that asked the WBC for rematches was, like I mentioned before, Jessica Gonzalez trying to get that rematch against Jasmine Rivas, which would be the third fight in the trilogy. Jessica was the loser of a split decision back in August 27th, which we mentioned. And Jasmine Rivas actually thinks that she won fair and square, and she wants to move on, and she wants to rematch Catherine Fitty. So the one on top of the heap is the WBC bantamweight champion, Catherine Fitty, and everybody's gunning for her. Jasmine Rivas asking for the rematch. Daniela Bermudez beating Mariana Juarez gets the title eliminator. So she is in line if she wants it. Maybe she'll go back to super flyweight and stay there. But if she wants to challenge for the title, I just don't see that fight happening, David and Elena, because I don't think Catherine Fitty is going to be able to take her to Africa and pay her an exorbitant amount of money to get her to Africa. And I don't know if Argentina – I don't know if Argentina wants to bring Catherine Fitty to Argentina. Maybe that could be – you know, that might be the case. That might be the case because, you know, I know that Daniela Bermudez fights on TV in Argentina like many other female fighters, and she obviously deserves to do it because she fought out of 21, 22 fights, 13 of them have been for world titles. And, you know, if they could get Catherine Fitty over there and have her fight on TV in Argentina and give Daniela Bermudez another title in another division, I don't see why they wouldn't do that. So that might be a possibility, but it all depends if Daniela Bermudez actually wants to stay at bantamweight.
Yeah, it's a good matchup. I spoke to the WBC about 3 months ago about Catherine Fee, and they had explained to me that they wanted to defend their title in their homeland. She wanted to defend their title. So nobody wanted to take that offer to go to Africa, basically. And I'm not sure of the offer, what the actual dollar amount was, but I know that a lot of people preferred not to fight her in Africa.
Yeah, I could only imagine. And you know, and if she gets, you know, one thing that we do see in boxing in general is that when it's a third world country, Like in Mexico and Argentina, and I'm pretty sure in Africa, and actually in France. Not that France is a third world country, but I, in doing some research on Jelena Miranovic's next opponent, Gael Armand, her hometown, which is, I forgot the name of it, but it's like a suburb outside north of Paris. Actually, the actual city supports her and pays for part of the card, part of the fight card when she fights, you know. And I'm pretty sure they're very involved. And she fights on TV over there, so obviously the TV jumps in there as well. And I'm sure that the city has to jump in there and contribute to the offer that they made Jelena, who mentioned in our interview a little while ago that they did make a very generous offer, and that's why she's going to France. And in Mexico, the same thing. You know, the state or the city, depending on how big the city is or the state, they pay basically a site fee for the promoter to have the fight card held in that state or in that city, because they're going to get promotion on TV, you know, and it might turn into tourism. So I'm sure that in Africa they do the same, and I'm pretty sure if the government gets behind Catherine Freedy, which I wouldn't see why not, being that she's the only boxing champion out of that country, I'm pretty sure if they're supporting her, it might be kind of tough to get it out of there and to defend somewhere that it's not in Africa.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let's move on in the last section of our show, the two-minute round here, your Hooks and Jabs look at the female fight world every other week here on the Leave It in the Ring Network. Let's do the upcoming calendar, which is not too much, but there is some important fights on there. Starting tomorrow, Friday, September 9th, from Argentina, Marcela La Tigresa Acuña versus Brenda Carvajal in a 10-rounder. Acuña defending her interim WBA featherweight title. They end up weighing in today, and both of them came in at a weight. If you have never seen Marcela Teresa Acuña, she's getting up there in age, but she's a beast. She's a beast, one of the best fighters, if not the best fighter that Argentina has ever produced. She has not been very active in the last couple of years, but she's a great fighter. David, I'm sure that you've seen footage of her. What do you think of Marcela Acuña?
Oh, yeah. She's one of the top females in the last 20 years. She's very, very good. If anybody gets a chance to see one of her fights, take the opportunity to take a look at her. She's fighting a very good girl, though. Brenda Carvajal is pretty good. It's not a
easy
fight. She's got a really good fight, very good test.
Yeah, that's going to be a good fight. Hopefully we can get some footage of it and watch it after the fact. On Saturday, September 10th, from Sweden, the fight that we had touched on before, Mikaela Loren will be facing Clara Swenson in a 10-rounder for the interim WBC 147-pound title. The winner here is rumored and is actually almost guaranteed to be the next opponent for Cecilia Breakhouse, who fights in October in Norway. And I know if you guys are not familiar with Mikaela Loren, she's turning out to be a little bit of a character. We talked about it here before, where she, you know, at the weigh-in, she poured water on her opponent. And now at the last press conference that they had a couple of days ago, she actually presented Clara Swenson with a cake that had the had 16-2 written on there, because Clara Swenson right now is 16-1. So obviously Mikaela Loren is telling her, after this fight, she'll be 16-2. I'm kind of surprised that Loren did not basically, you know, smash the cake in Swenson's face, which would be very appropriate for her since she likes to kind of mix it up, but she did not. But it started to get heated out there in Sweden, and this is looking to be a great fight over there in Sweden as well. Hopefully we get footage of that. Obviously, it's going to be televised in Sweden. It's actually a pretty big fight out there in Sweden, because they're both Swedes, I believe. And then with the icing on the cake, the cherry on top, no pun intended on the cake reference, that the winner gets to face Cecilia Breakhouse. That's pretty cool, because I would love to see Cecilia Breakhouse face Mikaela Loren.
It's going to be interesting, because Mikaela's dropping down in weight. She's actually 154, dropping down to 147.
And Spencer is going up. And Svensson is going up in weight. She's naturally 140. And actually, Michaela told her that. She said, I was going to give you the cake at the weigh-in, but maybe you should eat it now so you could come up in weight because we are fighting that welterweight. That's what she told her. So, that looks like a pretty good fight. And then also on Saturday, September 10th, from the Forum in L.A., David Avila will be in the house.
Yep.
For Sinisa Estrada moving up to 8 rounds at the flyweight division against former title challenger and very experienced Nancy La Chatita Franco. So this is somewhat of a step up for Sinisa Estrada. Her opponent with a similar style than her last opponent, which was Mandy Fuentes, which was at the Belasco Theater and televised on Estrella TV, where we saw Sinisa Estrada actually touch the canvas from a big right hook. So now she's going to be facing the same type of style, but from a fighter who is a lot more experienced than her and quite possibly better than Mandy Fuentes. The only advantage here that Sinisa has, well, not the only advantage, but one of the advantages is that Nancy Franco usually fights at straw weight, and now they're going to be fighting at flyweight, which is a more of a natural weight for Estrada. So it seems like she's going to be the bigger woman inside the ring.
Yeah, it's an interesting fight. It is an experienced opponent. What do you think, Elena?
I think a couple things. You know, obviously she has a smart team behind her, so they do see that this is a good fight to talk about because she is fighting someone more experienced, but they feel safe because the girl is naturally smaller than her. I think another thing that's going to come into play is that it's an 8-round fight. You know, Estrada has so much experience, but not at the higher, round. So I'd like to watch this fight and see how she does in the later rounds. But I think she's still safe, to be honest with you.
Go ahead. It's actually scheduled for 8 rounds, but sometimes in these weights, depending on time, and being that the two fights, the main event, the semi-main event, are going to be televised, don't be surprised if it gets downgraded to a 6-rounder.
It's not a very strong card. It's not a very good strong card, except for
the last one. Yeah. It's not like the last one that we saw there in April. But Sinisa is getting her third shot at the Forum and you know, building that fan base. So she's gonna have a tough opponent. I mean, the last time she was there, she had a tough opponent as well. Maybe a little bit too tough because she didn't really provide any fireworks. But maybe in her fight after that at the Belasco Theater, she did provide some fireworks, even going down to the canvas and then getting up and beating her opponent. So maybe this one is a little bit more action filled than her last time at the Forum. It was action filled, but she didn't look all that great against Selena Lopez.
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting fight. One thing I've noticed is that Sinisa is actually going for it. She's going for the knockout. She's not trying to outbox. She can easily outbox most of the girls she's already fought. But I see that she's not trying to just outpoint them. She's trying to knock them out. And that's when you get the fireworks.
Mm-hmm. On Saturday, September the 17th, from Poland, I'm gonna butcher this name, but I got to give it a shot. Ewa Piatkowska will face Alexandra. I think I did pretty well there. Ewa Piatkowska will be facing Alexandra Lopes in a 10-rounder for the vacant WBC super welterweight title. And lastly, this is a big card out there, Wednesday, September the 21st, from Tokyo, Japan. Kumiko Akihara will be facing Kayoko Ibata in a 10-rounder defending her WBO strawweight 105-pound title. But that fight is the main event of a 9 female bouts fight card happening in Tokyo, Japan on Wednesday, September
wow.
the 21st. So, Jesus, Japan is trying to get in the top 3 in female boxing in there's 9, and you know what? I saw the records of the fights that they have made, and it's just going to be a bloodbath. I mean, this is a very competitive fight, and the rest of them are going to be, there's no, like, hey, let's build up the record. I mean, they just got girls, and they put them, I mean, a 2-1 against a 1-1, and a 3-0 against a 5-2, and fights like that, you know, 4-rounders, 6-rounders. So it's going to, and these Japanese, they don't play around. I mean, they fight. So
no,
there's going to be no messing around. They're going to fight. That's going to be a great card in Tokyo, Japan. Hopefully, I mean, I wish we could be there, but, you know, like, what is the flight to Japan? You been to Japan, Helena?
You know, I haven't. I'd like to. My sister-in-law is actually from there, and so her and my brother just got married there last year. But if they want to have us out to commentate in English for them, you know, I'm definitely, I'm down for that.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. Yeah, that's one of my, that has been one of my bucket lists, like to go out to Japan and watch some boxing with it, because those guys, the Japanese, they're passionate about their boxing. I know that we have a mutual friend, I believe, David, who's from Japan, Catch Muta. You know him?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Catch Muta. He's a correspondent for a Japanese language from Japan, obviously, boxing magazine. But he's a correspondent out here in Southern California. So he comes down to Mexico. He goes to the fights in L.A. and everything. And I've had conversations with him regarding Japanese boxing. And they're passionate. They're like Mexican fight fans. And when you get a Mexican and a Japanese guy in the ring, you know you're gonna get fireworks. And
yeah.
If you got Japanese against Japanese, you're gonna get it. And then female boxing is gonna be insane on Wednesday, September 21st over there in Japan.
No, I agree. I think you know, and it's not just the Japanese. It's, you know, Japanese Korean. A lot of the Asian fighters, you really do see. Obviously, Pacquiao. They like a fight. They're there to fight, and so it's always action-packed and exciting. Another thing to add is Japan, that's where all the winning boxing gear comes from, correct?
Yeah,
so,
winning.
You know. Yeah, exactly. So they also make the best boxing gear in the universe. So
yeah.
I think,
that was your brand of choice, Helena, when you were fighting?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I think most world champions, and even in MMA now, you see it, is that they really do make the best gear. I love their shoes, their gloves, their headgear, everything. And our hands are everything to us, right? You don't want to hurt your hands. And they really were well made and really protect your hands better than anything else out there.
Awesome. Well, fight fans, that brings us to the end of the latest episode, number 12 of the 2 Minute Round podcast. And you know, one thing that I wanted to share with you guys is that, you know, I've spoken to David Duenas, who is our fearless leader here on the Leave It in the Ring network, and I asked him about the numbers of the 2 Minute Round. He tells us that they're pretty strong. They're pretty strong numbers, but I don't think that a lot of people listen to us live, but they listen to us on the subscription on the podcast. And but hopefully people will start calling in and talking female boxing. I know that you guys are out there listening, so it would be great to interact with our listeners and talk female boxing and tell us about maybe some female boxers in your area that we don't know about, or anything that has to do with female boxing. We, you know, we do this show for you guys. We take the time every other week to get on here and talk female boxing, because we want to bring the spotlight to female boxing a little bit more, so that we can start seeing great fights like we did a couple weeks ago with Heather Hardy and Shelley Vincent, and we're going to see with Jelena Mironovic and Gael Amán and Marcela Cunha and Brent and Carvajal this weekend, and all the stuff that we've been talking about. So hopefully if you guys are listening afterwards, maybe you guys could help us out and take the time and listen to us live here on the Leave It in the Ring network, and call in and interact with us, so that way we know that you guys are out there. With that said, thank you for listening. And any closing thoughts, David, Elena?
No,
go ahead,
David.
Sorry.
Oh, it's your turn, David. You go ahead and do it.
Well, I hope I see some of you at the forum this Saturday, Sunisa Estrada versus Nancy Franco, and the Chocolatito card. Feel free to walk up and tell me hi, or if you want to buy me a beer, or I can buy you beer, vice versa, feel free.
Now I have to drive up and pick you up on that offer, David.
Okay, Felipe.
All right, Fight Fans, thank you for listening here on the 12th episode of the 2-Minute Round, your Hooks and Jabs look at the female fight world every other week here on the Leave It in the Ring Network. Our next show will be September 22nd, where we'll give you the fight results of the fights that we just mentioned in the upcoming calendar. We'll give you more news and homework. Remember, guys, you guys have to watch the T-Rex documentary on Clarissa Shields so we can talk about it next show. Have a good night. Have a good night.
Good night.
Bye, Elena.
Bye, guys. Good night.
Good night.